Well, hi, everybody, and we continue now with externalization of the hierarchy and commentary thereon. We're on program number 88, and we're nearing the end of the book, gradually, here. Okay. We have discussed the externalizing ashrams, or the ashrams that are preparing for the externalization, under the guidance of Master Kutumi and Master Moria. And now here is some preparatory work, which is going to be done by the master who started what we are calling the labor movement. So this is regarded by the hierarchy as one of the most successful attempts in all history to awaken the masses of men in the brackets called middle class and lower class to general betterment, and thus set up a momentum which would, occultly speaking, swing them into the light. So the mass consciousness is involved here, and the efforts of this English master working on the third ray have been noted by hierarchy as successful. Of course, this involves education and a better way of life for so many people. The upper classes, we will always have, or as the Christ said, the rich and the poor, you will always have with you, but me for only a short time. Along with the development of the labor movement, mass education came into being, with the result that from the angle of developed intelligence, the entire level of conscious awareness was universally raised. You can't really raise the classes or people who have achieved, let's say, a certain amount in relation to the mass consciousness. You cannot elevate that consciousness without the advances in education. And we're going to see that again now. We're going to see many masses of people, due to the computer revolution, receiving a kind of education that they could not under ordinary circumstances. Now, this is written back in 1949, and Master DK is saying there is still much illiteracy, but the average citizen in all the Western democracies and in the Soviet Union is as well educated as the intellectual man in the Middle Ages. That's interesting. So I guess it points to what kind of education was available in those older times, because still there is a long way to go. Recently, we've been working on the soul of nations and looking at the problems of various nations. And one of the key things to look at is the degree of literacy and illiteracy, and especially in relation to the education of women, because where there is a strong education of women, the countries rise. So you have, he says, in this activity, an outstanding instance of how the masters work. For to the average onlooker, the labor movement arose from within the masses and the working classes. It was a spontaneous development based upon the thinking that the teaching of a mere handful of men who were regarded primarily as agitators and troublemakers. So let me read that again. It was a spontaneous development based upon the thinking and the teaching of a mere handful of men who were regarded primarily as agitators and troublemakers. I mean, maybe, you know, Karl Marx was among these. They were in reality a group of disciples, many of them unconscious of their esoteric status, who were cooperating with the law of evolution, you know, the will to evolve, third ray, and also with the hierarchical plan. They were not particularly advanced disciples, but they were affiliated with some ashram, and according to their ray, and were therefore subject to impression, which they brought forward for purposes of agitation, or at least change. Had they been advanced disciples or initiates, their work would have been futile, for their presentation of the plan would not have been adapted to the level of intelligence of the then totally uneducated masses composing labor. Okay, well, the hierarchy worked in the following way, that they inspired those who were, even if unconsciously, associated with them, and I guess with the third ray ashram here particularly. And then the progress was seen to be instigated by those who had received this impression from the hierarchy. But they were cooperating with the law of evolution and also with the hierarchical plan. A mere handful of men, often regarded negatively, I would suppose, by those who were in power. And when you're in power, you know, most people tend to seek to preserve the status quo, seek to preserve their own privilege. And I think it's important here that if the disciple or disciples are too advanced, they cannot really reach those at a rather lower level of development. So maybe the hierarchy can reach students of esotericism such as we are, but if they tried maybe directly to reach the masses of people, they would be less successful than working through their disciples, with whom the masses could recognize at least something in common. This master works primarily with the intelligentsia, and he is therefore a third ray master upon the ray of active intelligence. His ashram is occupied with the problems of industry and the goal of all the thinking, all the planning, and all the work of impressing receptive minds is directed towards spiritualizing the concept of the Labour Party in every country and of industrialists who turn them towards the goal of right sharing as a major step towards right human relations. Well, the Christ depends for his reappearance upon a measure of sharing appearing in international relations, and I suppose intra-national relations. And unless these large groups of people begin to respond in that way, there's not much chance that a sufficient level of sharing would be reached to elicit his forthcoming. Of course, we do tend to revert, and selfishness is again in the saddle. You know, what was it that Ralph Waldo Emerson said? Things are in the saddle and ride mankind. So there's a lot of selfishness re-emerging at this time, and looking after oneself and one's own rather than humanity as a whole, other nations and the whole human race. This we have to overcome. The third ray is always associated eventually with those who are intelligent, and we cannot start out as third ray souls, we've been told in the rays and initiations. The rays of attribute are the rays which characterize the soul and personality of the emergent man in the early stages. But eventually, the stage of intelligence is reached and the soul can be characterized by the third ray. I guess it doesn't mean that the people reached by this master and his ashram have necessarily to be on the third ray. That is not, I think, the case. But the they have to be, well, I can't even say they have to be coming into real intelligence. Let's just say opportunity has to be offered to them in an intelligent manner. So then a couple of things there about avoiding futility. And spiritualizing the concept of labor, of the labor party in every country. And of course, the greater rising into prominence of the middle class has been very important for these nations and has raised the whole level of the nation. You know, the man in the street who is rising towards the concept of labor being of value and towards the spiritualization of labor carries, is part of carrying the whole nation upward. So this master, therefore, cooperates with the Master R, who is the head of the third ray ashram from the monadic point of view. That's interesting. And who is also one of the triangle of forces which controls the greater ashram of the hierarchy. So here, the Master R is definitely being referred to in the context of the third ray. So often, even today, we hear him referred to only in the context of the seventh ray, and that would be a mistake because we would be giving no acknowledgement to the fact that he has become the Maha Chohan and basically the head of the whole larger third ray ashram, which includes not only the third ray, but the rays of attribute 4, 5, 6, and 7 under the third ray. So, you know, the fact that he cooperates with Master R is to be expected. The ashram of this master, who has always withheld his name from public knowledge, is a lesser ashram within the major third ray ashram, just as my ashram lies within the ring pass knot of the ashram of Master KH. Well, there's a good hint. And so this is one of the subsidiary ashrams, a secondary ashram, but under the third ray impression, and you kind of wonder three sub what. I think DK said maybe there were maybe three or four subsidiary ashrams that had been organized within the larger third ray ashram, and just about an equivalent amount in the sixth ray, ashram. This master is necessarily an Englishman. That's interesting. For the Industrial Revolution started nearly 100 years ago. Well, let's say the middle 19th century. The 1840s, 50s, 60s, and even really before that. And the potency of the work done is related to its mass effect and to the results achieved in every land by labor and its methods. Well, England does have, or maybe now the United Kingdom does have that Taurean personality, which links it with a planet much involved with the Industrial Revolution, and that is Vulcan. So the kind of material effort that went on in the United Kingdom in the Industrial Revolution was very important for that entire movement. And then again, when there is a Shambhala impact, Vulcan is again involved, first ray planet, and it influences industry strongly. Well, already the inventions that are necessitated by an advancing industry were coming in the late 18th century, with the coming in 1775 of the fifth ray cycle, lasting perhaps, according to some theories, about 350 years. So, you know, basically, it takes us to the year 1950, which is interesting because from 1775 to 1950 is 175 years, half of the 350-year cycle, and also the time when it was decided to withdraw stimulation from the fifth ray ashram and render it simply a subsidiary of the greater third ray ashram. Too much progress in one direction will create a dangerous imbalance. But anyway, we learn, you know, a little proportion here that we might say that as Master KH's ashram used to Master DK's ashram, so the major third ray ashram, and of course the Maha Chohan really is more than that, but there is a major third ray ashram, and I think it's under the guidance of one who was Paul Veronese. That major third ray ashram is to this ashram of the English master involved with the labor movement. This master is necessarily an Englishman? Yes, okay. And yeah, we've read that. All of the great labor organizations, national and international, are loosely knit together subjectively because in each group, this master has his disciples who are working constantly to hold the movement in line with the divine plan. It hasn't been easy because, you know, selfishness can spring up, and then a de-emphasis must occur, otherwise it too will get out of balance. And I think DK speaks about the eventual selfishness of the unions, which were originally constructed to bring some fairness into the capital and labor equation. If we go to the middle 19th century, we will find labor much abused by capital, and we will find a certain social Darwinism there, where it was just considered matter of course that, of course, labor being made of less educated human beings, less advanced human beings, would simply have to struggle for their livelihood, and that the captains of industry were right in making as much money as they could at the expense of labor. And we have books coming out which were social protest books about the evil conditions in factories. And in England, I think the phrase from one of the poets, was it Wordsworth? I'm not sure. But he referenced dark satanic mills, meaning, you know, the factories which were unhealthy to work in and dangerous and dark and basically providing a system whereby the owners or capital could live off the backs of labor, who never received enough to make a living wage, so they were always held down and held back. DK has discussed this somewhat in his chapter on capital and labor in the Problems of Humanity, how there seemed to be an agreement between the owners to keep labor down. Now, obviously, this master wanted to see them rise up into the middle class, more powerful, more educated, and living more through the heart than through intellectual manipulation. We still have this group of intellectual manipulators, and they are largely concerned with the stock market and maximizing their returns no matter what might be the effect upon the laborers. DK traces it back, you know, to a moon chain, earth chain maladjustment, with labor representing largely the earth chain and capital representing largely the more intelligent, more experienced moon chain groups. You wonder sometimes how people can be so selfish and so inconsiderate of those from whom they make their livelihood, but then this social Darwinism argument enters in and they simply say, well, that's life and that's how it is, and it's been proven that survival of the fittest is the law of nature. Actually, in fact, though, survival of those who work together socially for each other's mutual advantage has been proven to be the method by which all benefit. So it is an illusion that survival of the fittest must extend into the social arena. It's even true of animals who herd together for their own protection. We've seen pictures of crocodiles attacking young elephants, and then along comes the herd and disposes of the crocodile together. Again, the herd brings protection. It's not just a question of ignoring the plight of the younger elephant and just letting it be killed by the crocodile. No, they come together to defend the young. And this is operating in many animal groups especially the higher form of more intelligent animals. So we have to be careful lest a kind of mantra be repeated that is illusory, and it is repeated so often that people begin to believe it simply because of its repetition. You know, it was this master deceiver, Joseph Goebbels, who basically said, if you're going to tell a lie, tell a big one and repeat it often. So he had his method. But the demagogues use this method, and they must be somehow seen through. We have plenty of examples today. And if there is sufficient intelligence in the majority of those who constitute the middle class, especially, then the demagogues and their plans will be seen through. They will appear as obvious. So, going on here, it is well to bear in mind that all great movements on earth demonstrate both good and evil. The evil has to be subdued and dissipated or relegated to its right proportional place before that which is good and in line with hierarchical planning can find true expression. What is true of the individual is true also of groups. Therefore, the soul can express itself through the medium of the personality. Before the soul can express itself through the medium of the personality, that personality has to be subdued. You know, like training an animal, they sometimes call it like, not a pretty sound, but breaking the horse, which means training the horse or making it obedient to command. And this even operates with the big cats, the lions, even tigers. The personality has to be subdued, controlled, purified, and dedicated to service. It is this controlling, subduing process which is going on now, and it is vociferously fought by the selfish and ambitious element. This includes the highly intelligent and the less intelligent who rebel. The highly intelligent want to preserve their privileges, and so intelligently they rebel against the training and subduing process. The relatively unintelligent just want what they want when they want it, and they rebel not so intelligently, but just to keep preserving what they're accustomed to, that the personality and its desires shall prevail. We're dealing with this right now. There's a big battle between the people who may talk of soul in a religious sense, but think only in personality terms. And then, of course, those who have more experience. I guess in the United States, we have the blue states and the red states. You know, the blue states representing Jupiter and the heart, and the red states representing the solar plexus and Mars. It is a major battle for the survival of democracy, which is the honoring of the will of all people, and not just controlled by an oligarchy or controlled by the wealthy, controlled by the rich and powerful. And we don't know how it goes yet, but there are signs that if sacrifice is sufficient, the good can prevail, the heart can prevail, the indigo can prevail, Jupiter can prevail. Nevertheless, DK goes on, The work of this master is outstandingly successful in preparing the intellectual principle of the masses for eventual right recognition of the Christ. A right sense of values is being developed, and in the right direction of this potent labor group in every land lies the foundation of the new civilization. It's not just going to be brought in by those who have political or financial or ecclesiastical power. Something more is afoot, and these people have the heart, you know, oftentimes latent, but they are largely earth chain people, and well, the earth chain is the fourth, at least in the way the chains are usually depicted, and the heart chakra is the fourth, crown, ajna, throat, heart, the fourth. So they have the ability to create the foundation for a more benevolent, caring, socially aware civilization in which the principle of sharing and circulation of the necessities of life is honored. That principle is honored. And we have to help build that up. Thoughts are things, and the power of our rightly directed thought, individually and in group form, can do a lot of good. Going on here, 666, the number of the beast, you know, it's Mars. It's the entire mobilized personality, the physical body, the astral body, and the mental body oriented toward the fulfillment of personal desire. And that is the devil, and that is Satan in the usual sense in which it is understood, not in the truly esoteric sense as the host of solar angels. In a way, you know, the earth is the 777. Exactly why that may be is a little more obscure, but the 777 must change the orientation of the 666, which is like the influence of Mars within the 777. And in order to do that, we certainly need the 555, which is Venus, and maybe the 888, which is Mercury. Esoteric numerology can be interpretive and clarify much of the process in which we are participating or should be participating. The ashram of this master, DK says, is therefore occupied with worldwide economic problems and also with a direct attack upon the basic materialism to be found in the modern world. Basic, fundamental, unknown, unsuspected by those who are victimized by materialism. But the materialist is deluded by the appearance of things as they seem to be. And basically, the materialist is a superficial thinker. I've shown you that quotation from the old commentary, rush not from point to point, nor be deluded by, I'll paraphrase, by the things that are unreal and which pass away. The problems of barter and exchange, a new system of which may be coming to humanity, better than the old system, the significance of money, the value of gold, a basic symbol of the third ray of active intelligence. Moria warns us of the day when the atmosphere will be thick with gold and people won't be able to breathe because of the pervasive materialism. The value of gold, the production of right attitudes towards material living, and the entire process of right distribution are among the many problems dealt with in this ashram. Now remember, distribution has a lot to do with the seventh ray and also with Aquarius, the sign of distribution. And Aquarius is a sign on one level, much associated with the third ray. If you count backwards from Aries, Aries, Pisces, Aquarius, you get the number three, just as counting forward in a counterclockwise manner, you get Gemini, which also has much of the three in it, even though it's connected with the great second ray. So all these very important matters, because that's where humanity is focused now largely, are under the guidance of this master. And his ashram. I guess, you know, it's probably not Paul Veronese, because he's not an Englishman, and he probably is by now a Chohan and supervising under Master R the entire third ray ashram, of which this economic ashram is a subsidiary. So these are the issues that this most successful ashram, very successful ashram, is dealing with. Barter and exchange, the significance of money, the value of gold. It also, you know, gold also has a kind of a second ray meaning in relation to the heart. The production of right attitudes towards material living and enlightened materialism, which Aquarius will bring, and the entire process of right distribution. Well, the third ray determines where the energy will go and where the creative effort will be directed in the creation of useful forms and patterns that advance the divine plan. The work done is enormous and of great importance in preparing men's mind for the return of the Christ and the new age which he will inaugurate. So this third ray group is really, we can see, assisting the second ray groups that are very focused on the reappearance of the Christ. A word like enormous, coming from a master who does not exaggerate, is significant. So, you know, when people have sufficient, the goodness in them will often emerge, and a different kind of society will be developed. When they do not have enough, or when by heredity or natural inclination they have too much, then the principle of unification does not sweep through society. Here in the Scandinavian countries, the super rich do not exist. There are wealthy and there are those on welfare, but the idea of a trillionaire, which is now a possibility does not exist here. And people are kept off the street by the welfare that is offered to them. They have to be responsible about it, but it is offered to them. And we don't have scenes like you see in the Skid Row of Los Angeles, which is just devastating. These people often mentally compromised, maybe from the kind of life they've had to live, to a certain extent, living on sidewalks under tarpaulins, in filth and in danger. How can the United States look at itself as the greatest country in the world when that kind of thing now exists just the way long ago it existed in India? I was always appalled when I heard that in India people were starving, great famines would come, that they had no homes. And I thought to myself, well, you know, that's not America. Thank goodness it's not happening in America. But now it is. And so the fall of a nation into degradation can occur much more rapidly than we may imagine. Master Moria points this out, how rapidly a nation can fall when the true spiritual values are ignored and when selfishness is in the air and everything is monetized and gold is the standard of all. The story of King Midas, and by the way, there is a kind of a planet out there that the psychic astronomical mathematicians name Midas, you know, the golden touch, leads to disaster eventually, the monetization of all. Things no longer have their own true value. They're all put in terms of this third ray symbol used as it's described here, as gold. Well, we have a lot to work through, but there will be a reformation of the monetary system. And as I've said, and DK pointed out, seventh ray initiates of the first degree who are in the financial field will be handling this problem. And of course, they will be working with third ray initiates, the three and the seven. These are the two financial rays. They are interestingly also connected with what's called the Jewish force. And there is a tendency of people in the third subrace of the Aryan race to be excellent in the handling of finances, but subject to certain blank places or vacuities in their causal body. And then when the second ray is blended, you do have the astutely intelligent financial philanthropist, and that is also possible. But the second ray must be added. Capitalists and labor leaders, financial experts and thinking workers, and members of all different ideologies which are prevalent in the world today are to be found actively within this ashram. So we have to realize that there are many people skilled in these areas who are not selfish at all and who desire to see a solution which is fair and which works for the benefit of all human beings and for the human soul. The problem of selfishness must be broken. And that, of course, is basically a problem of mistaken identity. We take care of what we think we are, and we're wrong about what we are. We are the other person, or certainly we are within a relationship of potential unity with the other person or persons. But we mistake our identity and imagine that there is some insurmountable barrier, preventing us from unifying with the other. More of that social Darwinism again. So there are good people here, obviously, just as in any field. You know, Rays 1, 2, and 3, he gives us names for those who give in to their dweller when they're found on those rays. For the third ray, it's the manipulator of souls. For the second ray, the deluder of souls, the dispenser of false teaching. That's going on much. And then Ray 1, the destroyer of souls. And maybe we could extend that into the rays of attribute as well. So of these people, many of them are what the Orthodox religious man or hidebound occult student would regard as non-spiritual. Yet all of them are in reality deeply spiritual in the correct sense. But they care not for labels, for schools of thought, nor for academic esoteric teaching. They exemplify within themselves a livingness, which is the hallmark of discipleship. So DK is trying to broaden our point of view about who are the real servers, not necessarily those who are labeled as occultists or church people or, you know, members of some ideology. They are those who truly help, whatever label might be attached to them or none. So they are rejected as non-spiritual, and that is considered to be a victory for the counterforce, the force against progress, the obstructive force. If you narrow thinking down enough, you can create a real situation of imbalance and repudiation of the good. So let us be very understanding and tolerant of those whom we otherwise might reject, but who may be serving in greater capacity than we ourselves. The time has come when the first and major principle governing true esotericism must be grasped as conditioning all hierarchical workers. Right motive. It's hard to explain, you know. There are people who say just crazy things. You know, they only look at whether something is successful or not. They can be deluded. Something can be successful for wrong motive and temporarily unsuccessful with right motive. The motive will show. It is the motive that makes the true cooperator with hierarchy. They can be trusted to think aright and to orient themselves towards the good, and eventually to carry the will to good through goodwill into civilization, into society. So we have always to ask ourselves, why are we doing this? Why am I doing what I'm doing? Because if we just go with Maya, we'll just do what we do, you know, according to our habitual tendency. And we'll say, you know, that great excuse of all excuses, well, that's just how I am. Everybody knows that. I've got to be me, you know. Well, one doesn't have to be the me that is unfit for spiritual cooperation. That can change. So DK is impressing this upon us, right motive. And I'm sure if we look carefully, we'll find some things are done for mixed motive or wrong motive. He gives an example of servers and contributors of money to popular causes. They get a lot more from it in terms of how they are known, how they are regarded, the prestige which goes with it, the elevated opinion of others regarding their character. All the time, that's what they wanted. Not necessarily to support something that needed supporting according to the divine plan. What they gave helped, but eventually it would break down. The motive was wrong or mixed. Then he goes on to say, the time has come when the quality of ashramic work is recognized, first of all, as being selfless service. And it's hard to get rid of that little self, you know, when we're told, take the eyes off the little self. It's hard to do. And some people are narcissistically addicted to keep the eye exactly on the little self and its unimportant fate. Well, we have to learn how to discern those who are animated by right motive and selfless service and those who are not. So, you know, we're into this, the time has come. Further, the time has come when men everywhere must realize that entry into a master's ashram is dependent upon intelligence plus right motive and service. As DK often says with some latent humor, we do not regard as our good companions unintelligent fanatics. Sometimes when you're working on something one-pointedly, you may look like a fanatic to others, but in fact, the story is it's that one-pointedness is really a balancing that is needed when you look at a number of lives in sequence. Of course, with someone like Master DK, working 30 years with Alice Bailey, you could say he was very one-pointed, but in addition to what he was doing with her, he was carrying forth many other responsibilities. Master Moria kind of sums all that up by saying, burden me still more as I enter the beautiful garden. So how much can a master carry? It kind of brings us to the question of Atlas and the search for the golden apples of the Hesperides, which Hercules conducted. And only when he selflessly took on the burden of Atlas, which basically means, in a way, joining the hierarchy and upholding the world, did the apples of wisdom, golden in this respect, representing wisdom and not money, roll into his hands. So there's a bit of a apparent contradiction there. You have to concentrate on service with the right motive and approach it intelligently if the golden apples of wisdom are going to come into your hands. Most people will say, well, if I keep on searching for the golden apples one pointedly, they're sure to come to me. But the truth is, service is required. And we do remember DK basically telling us that more can be accomplished through right service than even through meditation. There's the story of the great Ramakrishna with his dedication to the mother. Was it Kali? Was it something else? And the yogi who had practiced the realization of the Atman for many, many years. And this yogi took Ramakrishna under supervision, thinking that it would be a long time before Ramakrishna could come to an appreciation that the yogi had. But it wasn't, because with his loyalty to the mother, he accomplished overnight what it took the other man 30 years to accomplish. So sometimes there are strange developments in the occult field, as we are trying to develop occultly within the divine plan. And who knows when the door opens and when it closes, and how much labor is required. No question that Ramakrishna was a great initiate. At least an initiate of the fourth degree, I would say, and maybe more. I'm remembering that his student, another great yogi, Swami Vivekananda, which means the discrimination leading to bliss, Viveka, discrimination, and Ananda, bliss, said, oh, you think I'm the Gnani. I'm the one who pursues knowledge in depth and voluminosity. But no, the real Gnani, Gnani, is Ramakrishna, even though he had all the trappings of the great mystic. Well, all of that lies ahead of us to the degree we are sincere, persistent, and oriented towards service in a practical way, serving how we can, where we can, recognizing the need. One of the psychic gifts, we're told, a high psychic gift, to recognize need and to serve to fulfill it. When these three factors are present in any human being, so let's just say right motive and selfless service and intelligence. Let us test ourselves on these points. When they are present, the masters know that good material is presented to them for training. Today, the world is full of such men and women, and in them lies the dominant hope of the future. Well, there are many types of hope for the future, but this is one that's in a high position, because the masters must work through their disciples and initiates, who must be trained in ways that are not suspected by the disciple or initiate. And the training is arduous. So they look for good material, and may we then be good material to be molded under the impress of the spiritual will Vulcan, promoted by the master who has us in training. Master DK's ashram is very much a training ashram, and he has disciples and initiates who don't really, quote unquote, belong to him, but whom he helps get started and gives the foundation to, so that they can return to the ashram where they really belong. That kind of relationship was existing between Master DK's ashram and Master KH's ashram. So often the disciple would go into DK's ashram, and once maybe the second initiation had been reached, it was possible to transfer into KH's ashram. But sometimes, he says, you belong to KH's ashram, and obviously the person had not yet achieved the second degree. Really, a lot of the students with whom Master DK dealt could not yet claim the second degree. Well, they wouldn't claim it anyway. Not claim. One more point I would like to discuss, he says. Through the work of this master and his ashram, the sealing of the door where evil dwells will come about. Because it is essentially the group, this group, which, if I dare so express it, is coping with raw materialism and the false values which it engenders. Well, when you're looking at governmental functioning right now, and even ecclesiastical functioning, there's a lot of raw materialism. No question about it. The love of money is the root of all evil. Well, the love of our own desires fulfilled, those that can be through money, is the root of all evil. It's another way of saying low desire is the root of all evil. The door where evil dwells. I remember people saying, oh, the great invocation is just propagating illusion, because everybody knows you have to deal with evil rather than seal it away. But then DK says, look, and Moria says so too, we in Shambhala or Shambhala deal with the evil you can't handle. the very best is that you should become impervious to it, and Shambhala will have to take care of it, especially if it's cosmic evil. There is the natural evil of ignorance, to which everyone has been subject at some time and maybe relatively still is. But then there's the deliberate retrogressive cosmic evil. And no disciple or ordinary initiate is going to be able to handle that. That is a shambolic task. So the harmless way is to seal the door where evil dwells, drive it back onto the astral plane, to the place of Mara, Marakara, and clear the etheric halls of debris, and eventually attack the glamour upon which that evil thrives, and not be filled with pride, with hubris, oh, I can handle it, when in fact you can't. DK warns us about sending love to such as Hitler and other fascist dictators, because it's an energy that is simply an energy, and they can use it in a bad way. And besides, they are much more powerful than the one who sends the energy. And so the sender could be quite easily overcome. We have to be very careful in dealing with these occult matters, and we cannot fall victim to sentimentalism when dealing with powerful negative forces. You know, the old saying that fools, you can probably complete it, fools rush in where angels fear to tread. And we don't want to be among those fools to think we can handle what we cannot handle. The magician is dealing with deadly forces, which en masse can kill him or her, and has to take the utmost precaution to make sure that the circle is sealed or that the pentagram is sealed so that these forces cannot flood in and drown him or burn him up or suffocate him. As far as death by air, it's a different thing, and it has not been given out what it is, but we can imagine the scattering, the dissipation of what was meant to stay coherent. Caution on the occult path, and no pride that allows us to presume that we can handle what we can't handle. So I think, you know, sadder but wiser, as we go along on this path, we learn to be really careful. Okay, this door where evil dwells, you know, not completely sealed yet, no. Even after the dreadful war, the door has to be sealed by a vast mass of coordinated human forces, and not by one or two enlightened men. And this fact must be grasped by you. This is where the masses come in, especially the increasingly educated masses, who can utilize goodwill as a reflection of the will to good, to aid in the sealing of this door, which basically would let the forces of glamour and illusion, and the chaos of rampant Maya into physical plane life so that things were out of control. And then if you add to that mix the possibility of taking drugs, you've capitulated entirely. In the Yoga Sutras, we learn that the dark forces utilize drugs and other things that help or incline the man to lose control. The energy of love wisdom, says the Tibetan, the energy of the second ray can and will bring in the kingdom of God. So, you know, the third ray masses will be more susceptible to love wisdom as they are increasingly educated. The energy of the divine will can and will galvanize with its dynamic potency the entire human family to the point where a group transition will take place from the fourth into the fifth kingdom. And we might even call that the first initiation of humanity. All these things lie ahead, and not so far ahead, really. We have to realize how close we are to the possibility of this transition. This was written, you know, 70 years ago, 71 years ago, and much has happened that brings us closer, even though there is that rising again of the negative powers on the threshold of further liberation. So, I don't know how many human units must undergo this first initiation, this stepping into the fifth kingdom. But it is a mass movement. What I love about this is that when the Christ reappears, which in my calculation certainly cannot be until we have entered the true age of Aquarius, without the residues of the sixth ray in the Aquarius, sixth ray in Pisces. When we enter that age of Aquarius, and when the Christ reappears, it will indicate that humanity, in whatever measure, has taken the first initiation. I found, you know, putting those pieces of information together very important. Christ's return to visibility means that those who must initially take this first initiation, relatively en masse, have taken it. And of course, before that happens, a lot of first ray Vulcan and Pluto have to come into the picture. Vulcan, the weaponry, you know, the use of the mineral kingdom against humanity, and Pluto, the dredging up of the diseased past and the need to heal it. So he goes on and says, it is nevertheless this third ray energy as wielded in the ashram of this English master under the direction of the Maha Chohan, and I would say also maybe the direction of the third ray master who supervises 4, 5, 6, and 7. But anyway, under the direction of the Maha Chohan, the Lord of Civilization, which will force a right attitude towards materialism or towards materiel, which will bring about a balance between material values and spiritual. That is an Aquarian potential. and which will eventually thrust back into futility, the great phrase, the forces of evil which have for so long distracted the world of men. You know, getting them off the right track and getting them, inclining them to deal with certain preoccupations which are not leading to the goal. Materialism is a preoccupation. So there is a right attitude towards material, and there is the achievement of a balance between material values and spiritual. We cannot discount the material plane. That would, at this point, be non-spiritual. We're told that this is precisely what the sixth ray has done for 2,000 years. It has discounted the effects on the physical plane. You know, why kick the earth like a ball? Is it so poor a thing, you know, that you must kick it away? No, the physical plane has become quite a mess under the heedlessness of the sixth ray, and the seventh ray in Aquarius will balance that, so there will be an enlightened materialism handling matter divinely, and which will eventually thrust back into futility the forces of evil which have distracted man for long. So getting off the track is delay, is a form of obstruction. You know, you dangle a colored lure before a fish, and the fish is attracted by the colors and eventually bites down on the concealed hook, and you are trapped. The fish is trapped, we are trapped. So we must not allow ourselves to be led off the track. When once we enter the stream at the second initiation, the current is pretty much sweeping us along toward higher initiations, toward our appointment in the desert with the powers of the personality. We are being swept along by a directed current, and less likely to go astray, though one can go astray after that point and find oneself through an ingrained selfishness to be taking the left-hand path. There's a lot of purification going on at that second initiation, but the members of the left-hand path, or those thus inclined, use purification for their own selfish reasons. So they do that to preserve their power and not be overcome by forces which would get in the way of their objectives. But still, the second degree is a great dividing point. Maybe that's why it takes so long to reach it once the birth of the Christ in the heart has occurred. For many people, it takes a long time, quite a number of lives, as reflected in the life of the Master Jesus from his birth to his baptism, the baptism being the symbol of the second degree. And interestingly, you know, I'm pretty sure it was the Christ in the body of Jesus who was taking that second degree as a dramatization. He was telling John the Baptist, suffer it to be so. Otherwise, the law cannot be fulfilled. It's true also that Jesus had taken the second degree, probably as Joshua, the great commander, and the third degree as Joshua, the high priest. So this was all an enactment for the benefit of onlooking humanity, who would have to go through similar situations, either the baptism by water or, more recently, the baptism by fire, such as at the Pentecost, which made of that group a far more cohesive organ for the spreading of the great teaching. Because we do have, in Masonry, we have something called the FC. DK talks about it actually openly, about the fellow craft, and it's fellowship that is achieved at that second initiation. No use to keep secret what DK has already revealed in writing about Masonry. It is a way of building the human being. By building the inner temple of Solomon and leading eventually to the building of the temple of Ezekiel on a much higher turn of the spiral. Now we have, of course, gone beyond the usual hour that I take for these programs, but if I'm on a roll, even a little, I try to continue. You will note, therefore, how the three divine aspects are united in one great movement to bring in the kingdom of God. Will, love, intelligence, and that the first steps towards this longed for consummation, the whole creation groaneth and travaileth, awaiting the appearance of the sons of God, that the first step towards this longed-for consummation is the appearance of the masters upon the physical plane, and then somewhat later, the reappearance of the Christ. Let's not forget that, because the masters themselves are not yet acknowledged as being in the planetary centers, nor have they necessarily moved out into that position, but following the conclave of 2025, that movement will begin to occur. And then, as it says, somewhat later, DK is being vague necessarily, because we don't know the time, the hour. It depends on the energetic condition of humanity. Then will come the Christ. And as I said, we're still in kind of a leftover, hangover, a residual period, when the energies of Pisces, not necessarily in their best aspect, and of the sixth ray also, not in its best aspect, still resides with humanity, conditioning those who are more reactionary in their attitudes and want to go backwards, willfully want to go backwards. All right, so it's just kind of moving along here. So that's the end of the third ray ashram discussion. End of discussion. Third ray ashram related to the labor movement. One of these mornings, I'm going to get the vacuum cleaner and see if I can pull out from under the keyboard whatever is preventing me from using the Buddhic E. So this will have to be it. Taking much too long, of course, to do that. Yeah, that's where we are. So now we're going to begin the discussion of yet another ashram. And it will be generally, I think, under the supervision of the Master R. So, we now come to a consideration of the vast ashram, controlled by the Master R. You know, all this change took place around the year 1925. He is the Lord of Civilization. It's a long term of office, many thousands of years, at least in terms of the last Mahachohan. He is the Lord of Civilization, and his is the task of bringing in the new civilization for which all men wait. It is a third ray ashram. This has to be remembered by those who are still stuck thinking of Master R as the seventh ray master, and therefore unfolds within its ring pass not all the ashrams to be found upon the third ray of active intelligence, upon the fifth ray of concrete knowledge, and upon the seventh ray of ceremonial order. Okay, so he doesn't mention four and six, but to a certain extent, as rays of attribute, they come under his supervision, at least in the beginning. There are some diagrams which basically give that to you. I would like to see them. There we go. And if I can make that just a little bit bigger, maybe we may notice. We may notice that all four of the rays of attribute, the ashrams on those rays, are connected with this third ray ashram, supervised by another master who is subsidiary to Master R. And yet what we seem to have is that five and seven, at least in the way DK discussed it, are thus connected. We do see from the Christ a blue line going to the fourth ray ashram, which is on the same ray line, and a blue line going to the sixth ray ashram of Master Jesus, a blue line. But we see a general blue line going to the third ray supervisor of all the four, who is under Master R, and the whole third ray grouping consists of the rays of attribute as well, under this one ray of aspect, the third ray. Interesting, from the Manu, red lines are coming in, going to the fifth ray ashram, and also the seventh. But the fifth and the seventh are particularly related to the third. So let's just, you know, follow the lines, follow the colors, and see what is under special stimulation. Christ specially stimulating the fourth and sixth, and the manual especially the fifth and seventh, and the third ray apparently connected with all four. There's lots to study in those charts. Okay. So the fifth and the seventh, though, coming under the third ray, it seems a little incomplete compared to the map, but we can understand that the fifth ray is very related to the third, and so is the seventh. Three and five, the mental approach. Three and seven, the financial approach. All these ashrams are working under the general direction of Master R. He works primarily through the masters of these three types of ray energy, I suppose three, five, and seven. He himself at this time is occupied with seventh ray energy, which is the order producing energy upon our planet, even though it's a third ray ashram. So his particular focus is the seventh ray energy, and we'll get a color in there that is not exactly correct, but it's as close as we can get with the highlighting. And still the mystery remains, in what way are the three and the five, or rather the four and the six, also under the great third ray? Certainly they are not as magnetic to the third ray as are five and seven, but still, you know, we saw the map of the hierarchy, and the lines do go to all the ashrams conditioned by the rays of attributes. So that has yet to be solved. So the energy which is order producing, and he's concentrating upon that aspect of energy which is under his supervision, which does not take away from the fact that he's working principally on the third ray, but the seventh ray, of course, is closely related to the third ray. So this is the ray, says the Tibetan, this is the ray of ceremonial order, and through the activity of its energy, when correctly directed and used, a right rhythm is being imposed upon all aspects of human living. An effort is being constantly made to arrest the ugly chaos of the present and to produce the ordered beauty of the future. Sounds like the fourth ray also is involved. The two rays most maybe connected with beauty, the fourth and the seventh. So temporarily at least, and maybe for the duration of the Aquarian Age, the Master R will be working with seventh ray energy within a third ray context. The major weapon now being used by the combined forces of evil, why combined? Well, there are probably a number of examples with the six leaders in the East and the six in the West. So maybe their efforts are combined. Anyway, that major weapon is chaos, disruption, lack of established security, and consequent fear. The potency of these evil forces is exceedingly great because they belong to no one group of people and to all the ideologies. Well, we see this in a number of countries. People now, due to the disease, the pandemic, have been thrust into financial insecurity. And much fear is arising because of it. And because they are psychologically unsophisticated, they blame others, projecting upon them as if they, these others, were the cause. The chaos produced by indifference, and that's, you know, that can be a sixth ray factor, because the sixth ray ignores everything but that special target in which it has invested its greatest interest. So the chaos produced by indifference, the chaos produced by uncertainty, the chaos produced by fear, by starvation, by insecurity, by watching others suffer innocently, and the chaos produced by the warring and conflicting ambitious elements in every nation without exception, these are the factors with which the Master R is attempting to deal. And the task is of supreme difficulty. So these are all the different kinds of chaos. And if we are observant, we will see this chaos. In these couple of years, let's say Venezuela, which has lost its source of income through oil. It had basically one commodity there, has been falling apart in many ways, and the people have been forced to flee, and for the sake of any kind of livelihood whatsoever. There's warring of ideologies going on in the United States now, and fear is rampant. Hatred is rampant, and there is no truly salutary rhythmic condition. The Black Lodge is at work, creating obstruction wherever it can. Anyway, Master R is attempting, through his focus on the order producing seventh ray energy, to reduce this chaos. The entire rhythm of international thinking has to be altered, says DK, and that constitutes a slow and arduous task. The evil personalities, which, now notice he doesn't say the evil souls, right? The evil personalities, which in every country, without exception, are responsible for the chaos and uncertainty, have eventually to be replaced, hopefully through elections, by those who can work in cooperation with the rhythm of the seventh ray and thus produce ordered beauty. Well, we're in the midst of this need for replacement right now. There are dictators at work and would-be dictators at work in the United States, in Brazil, in Hungary, in the United Kingdom. China is more subtle, perhaps. It's a dictatorial setup. Russia is more subtle. It's a dictatorial setup. The strongman, the president for life, you know, the one who has grasped power and wants to preserve it, whatever the constitution of its country says to the contrary. These people are emerging because of the fear and the chaos. The ignorant masses look towards the strong man, the demagogue. He can handle it, she can handle it, and relieve us of the necessity of handling it, which we don't think we could do anyway. If I'm speaking as one of the people who has lost a great deal, health, job, finance. There are many people who have lost a great deal and don't know how to dig themselves out. So the alteration of the rhythm through sharing, through goodwill, through the development of peace, through the cleansing of the interaction, all of this has to take place in preparation for the, reappearance of the Christ. That was 70 years ago. It's the same now. We have seen over these 70 years the rise of many dictators, really cruel people, caring only about themselves. They don't seem to last too long. They are swept aside. And occasionally, some really good leaders emerge. We'd have to list under the title, really good leader, Nelson Mandela. One can only imagine the bloodshed that would have occurred without him to lead the transition from usurped white power to a fairer, more complete distribution of power, including the native Africans of that part of the world. Somehow he was very skillful in doing that. And maybe there have been other places less dramatic, and there have also been those who hold on to power for dear life and basically don't care about their nationals. They just enslave their nationals and try to preserve power. The typical president for life, you know, and we've seen a lot of that come up in Africa, whose systems are not yet as developed as later they will be. Well, the entire rhythm of international thinking, notice it's thought that has a certain rhythm, subject to beneficial cycles of which people can become increasingly aware. But it's a slow task. And we cannot imagine that overnight the beneficent changes will occur. And it may take centuries, even with the presence of the Christ, because he's not allowed to do it for us, as it were. The Tibetan goes on and says, the task is further complicated by the fact that in the substitution of order for chaos, national cultures must be preserved and the outline of the new civilization presented to the people. Well, he wouldn't have written a book like The Destiny of the Nations unless national cultures had to be preserved. If everything was to be standardized in a totalitarian manner, the particular culture or cultures within nations would not have to be noted and their foundational energies given and studied. But we need variety within the unity that is coming, and within the synthesis we need the articulation of different virtues. And so it's a more complicated task than simply saying, let's standardize everything and everyone. That would be the life-suppressing totalitarian solution, the will-suppressing totalitarian solution. The tail would be wagging the dog. The little power-hungry individual would try to force his way upon the multitude that has a great variety to offer through its individuals. So it's more complicated than just saying, we're all going to do this. This major ashram is therefore confronted with two elements in every land and nation. Those people who hold on to the bad old things of the past and those who work for the extreme opposite of this point of view and for that which is new. Two approaches. And we know that there is so much today that is outworn and basically out of keeping with the advancing cycles, that we know where people like ourselves have to stand and for what we have to stand. The emerging new in line with the divine plan. Under the influence of this seventh ray energy, now remember we're talking about a third ray ashram, but the focus is upon the seventh ray. Under the influence of the seventh ray energy, balance has to be brought about and preserved, and the quote, noble middle way, close quote, of right action and of right human relations can be safely trodden, taking advantage of that which lies ahead and of the best values which have been lived through in the past. So we don't throw the baby out with the bathwater, as it is said. The noble middle way. And there the fourth ray can help as it comes into power, especially the higher part of the fourth ray that is not all about friction and conflict. The task of the Master R is, however, lightened by the fact that the seventh ray is now coming into activity and its potency is increasing year by year. His task is also aided by the intelligent work done by the ashram of the English master, who works consistently with the awakening and arising of the masses. So after 70 years, a lot more seventh ray has come into expression, and more and more seventh ray souls are making their appearance. But these two rays work together, the third and the seventh, and the increasing intelligence of the masses will help bring them into the condition of right order that the Master R is seeking to see emerge with regard to these masses. It is happening. So, you know, the ashrams are mutually dependent, and they have the ability to assist. They have the ability to assist each other, which is the way it must be eventually, especially in the Aquarian age of universality, which means that every contributing ashram is recognized for the value it brings and aided by, supported by the other ashrams who are also recognized. In the beginning, you know, the different rays, as is said, fight and kill each other, more at the base of the pyramid, but as we rise, as the ashrams rise up along the pyramid towards the peak, they really begin to appreciate how they can be enhanced by the contributions of other ashrams who also appreciate the same. Now, this is interesting. Every October and March, the Master R gathers together his council of helpers, the masters and the senior initiates, I guess fourth degree initiates, in the ashrams of the third, the fifth, and seventh rays. And though he is the head of the third ray of aspect and is in control, therefore, of the two rays of attribute mentioned above, he does not himself wield these forces because he is one of the three heads of hierarchy and his work cannot be confined to the activity of any one ray. Well, really, he has five rays under his control, the rays of Brahma. He works through the ashrams of these rays, but he himself works primarily in cooperation with the Christ and the Manu, and that this explains a great deal of how he can inspire and yet not be confined to the wielding of one particular ray, even though we might say that his concentration is upon the seventh ray. The curious thing about the seventh ray, if it is so that rays 1, 2, and 3 combine in different ways to make the rays of attribute, is that 3 rays, 1, 2, and 3, all in rather equal measure, combine to make the seventh ray. So it is indeed a balancing ray. Now, does every March, every October, does this mean Libra, third ray, and Aries? Or does it mean somehow, October can be Scorpio, March can be Pisces. I have a sense that we're dealing with third ray Libra and basically first ray Aries in opposition around the 23rd, maybe, of October, Libra begins. No, that's Scorpio. Libra ends all through most of October. Libra is active, but in March. The majority of time is taken in Pisces, but right around the 21st or 20th of March, we begin Aries. So maybe, it's a little ambiguous, but maybe at those times involving those signs, Libra and Aries, the Master R holds his convocation, especially of 3rd, 5th, and 7th ray groupings, ashrams. Interesting about how these groups meet interiorly. We're also advised that the Master Jesus in person meets with certain high prelates of the higher churches like Episcopal and Catholic. All the many sects, they are splinter groups, but the High Church has those within it who are direct students of the Master Jesus. So ongoingly, these meetings occur and advance the plan from a particular ashramic perspective. It's interesting, he's not wielding the 5th and 7th ray particularly, but he's working through them. And they are forces which suggest rays of attributes. Well, let's see. Yes, I think we're going to come to Master DK's ashram, but it's probably a good thing now. We are very close to the 2-hour mark. And I think we'll be particularly interested in Master DK's statement about his own ashram. He does so many things. He has so much variety in what he does. Working with Alice Bailey was only part of it. And many other things, many other approaches were part of it as well. So here we are on page 669. And we'll go back to the beginning of the previous one 2 hours ago. So we finish here from 664 to 669. And today being the 20th. And then we'll continue as best we can when we can with program number 89. With a little bit about Master DK's ashram. 5 specialized forces, 5 ashrams, working at the initial phases of organizing the externalization. So this has been 88. And approximately 2 hours, and maybe a few minutes, 664 to 669. Whoop. And that's today, the 20th. And maybe, and I hope I can continue on this day too. And this will be number 89. And we'll go from 669 to wherever we go. We're about 30 pages away from the completion of the book. Though there still remain some essays at the beginning of the book, which I want to take a look at for the sake of completeness, though they may not be quite as germane, quite as immediate as these later essays from 47, 48, 49. All of this is in the manner of preparing for the third installment, which comes out around the year 2025, or at least begins. Probably not to be Alice Bailey, probably an initiate of some different ray. The whole work with Alice Bailey seemed to have a very second-ray influence. Blavatsky and her historical presentation of life on Earth had a third-ray influence, and maybe we're going to get the first-ray influence coming in the new installment. But we just have to remain very, very watchful, knowing that once before we missed the boat and, you know, did not recognize who Alice Bailey was, and that what she wrote was being written under the same impression as that which impressed in a somewhat different way Madame Blavatsky. So we'll go on as soon as we can with what's going on in relation to Master DK's ashram. And lots of love, many blessings. There's a lot of material here, isn't there? And I think we can absorb it, and if we do, it will make of us a more effective server at this time when world service is so important, just before the great conclave of 2025. We know that conclave occurs at 2025, we just don't know whether the publication of the books is exactly 2025 or simply close to it, you know, a little before, a little after. It's the quality that we have to recognize. And can we recognize something that's written by Master DK? Or are we deceived by other kinds of writing from maybe an intelligent disciple, but one who is not actually taking dictation from Master DK? We have to see whether we will be astute enough to recognize. Okay, so we'll see you soon, and let's just keep going. We'll keep going.